leaves crunch, Tass said it seemed kind of silly. And they relaxed. All except Raistlin. They walked for about 2 hours, traveling at a smooth but rapid, easy pace along a smooth and clear trail. Shadows lengthened as the sun made its downward slide. Tanis felt at peace in this forest. He had no fear that the awful, winged creatures could follow them here. Evil seemed out of place, unless, as Raistlin said, one brought one's own evil into the wood. Tanis looked at the mage. Raistlin walked alone, his head bowed. The shadows of the forest trees seemed to gather thickly around the young mage. Tanis shivered and realized that the air was turning cool as the sun dropped below the treetops. It was time to begin thinking about making camp for the night. Tanis pulled out Tasselhoff's map to study it once more before the light faded. The map was of elven design, and written across the forest in flowing script were the words, Darken Wood. But the woods themselves were only vaguely outlined, and Tanis couldn't be certain if the words pertained to this forest or one farther south. Raistlin must be wrong, Tanis decided. This can't be Darken Wood. Or if so, its evil was simply a product of the mage's imagination. They walked on. Soon it was twilight, that time of evening when the dying light makes everything most vivid and distinct. The companions began to lag. Raistlin limped, and his breath came in wheezing gasps. Sturm's face turned ashen. The half-elf was just about to call a halt for the night when, as if anticipating his wishes, the trail led them right to a large, green glade. Clear water bubbled up from underground and trickled down smooth rocks to form a shallow brook. The glade was blanketed with thick, inviting grass. Tall trees stood guard duty on the edges. As they saw the glade, the sun's light reddened, then faded, and the misty shades of night crept around the trees.
"Do not leave the path,"
Raistlin intoned as his companions started to enter the glade. Tanis sighed.
"Raistlin," he said patiently, "we'll be all right. The path is in plain sight, not 10 feet away. Come on. You've got to rest. We all do. Look."
Tanis held out the map. "I don't think this is Darken Wood." According to this, Raistlin ignored the map with disdain. The rest of the companions ignored the mage and, moving off the path, began setting up camp. Sturm sank down against a tree, his eyes closed in pain, while Caramon stared at the smaller, fleeting shadows with a hungry eye. At a signal from Caramon, Tasselhoff slipped off into the forest after firewood. Watching them, the mage's face twisted in a sardonic smile.
"You are all fools. This is Darken Wood, as you will see before the night is ended."
He shrugged.
"But as you say, I need rest. However, I will not leave the path."
Raistlin sat down on the trail, his staff beside him. Caramon flushed in embarrassment as he saw the others exchanging amused glances.
"Oh, Raist," the big man said. "Join us. Tass has gone for wood, and maybe I can shoot a rabbit."
"Shoot nothing."
Raistlin actually spoke above a whisper, making everyone start.
"Harm nothing in Darken Wood. Neither plant nor tree, bird nor animal."
"I agree with Raistlin," Tanis said. "We have to spend the night here, and I don't want to kill any animal in this forest if we don't have to."
"Elves never want to kill, period," Flint grumbled. "The magician scares us to death, and you starve us. Well, if anything does attack us tonight, I hope it's edible."
"You and me both, dwarf."
Caramon heaved a sigh, went over to the creek, and began trying to assuage his hunger by drowning it. Tasselhoff returned with firewood.
I didn't cut it, he assured Raistlin. I just picked it up.
But even Riverwind couldn't make the wood catch fire.
The wood's wet, he stated finally, and tossed his tinderbox back into his pack. We need light,
Flint said uneasily as the night's shadows closed in thickly. Sounds in the woods that had been innocent in the daytime now seemed sinister and threatening.
Surely you do not fear children's stories, Raistlin hissed. No, snapped the dwarf. I just want to make certain the Kender doesn't rifle my pack in the dark. Very well, said Raistlin with unusual mildness.
He spoke his word of command.
Shirak.
A pale white light shone from the crystal on the tip of the mage's staff. It was a ghostly light, and did little to brighten the darkness. In fact, it seemed to emphasize the menace in the night.
There. You have light,
the mage whispered softly. He thrust the bottom of the staff into the wet ground. It was then Tanis realized his elven vision was gone. He should have been able to see the warm red outlines of his companions, but they were nothing more than darker shadows against the starry darkness of the glade. The half-elf didn't say anything to the others, but the peaceful feeling he had been enjoying was pierced by a sliver of fear.
I'll take the first watch, Sturm offered heavily. I shouldn't sleep with this head wound anyway. I once knew a man who did. He never woke up.
We'll watch in twos, Tanis said. I'll take the first watch with you.
The others opened packs and began making up beds on the grass. Except for Raistlin, he remained sitting on the trail, the light of his staff shining on his bowed, hooded head. Sturm settled down beneath a tree. Tanis walked over to the brook and drank thirstily. Suddenly, he heard a strangled cry behind him. He drew his sword and stood all in one motion. The others had their weapons drawn. Only Raistlin sat, unmoving.
Put your swords away, he said. They will do you no good. Only a weapon of powerful magic could harm thee.
An army of warriors surrounded them. That alone would have been enough to chill anyone's blood, but the companions could have dealt with that. What they couldn't handle was the horror that overwhelmed and numbed their senses. Each one recalled Karaman's flippant comment.
I'll fight the living any day of the week, but not the dead.
These warriors were dead. Nothing more than fleeting, fragile white light outlined their bodies. It was as if the human warmth that had been theirs while they lived lingered on horribly after death. The flesh had rotted away, leaving behind the body's image as remembered by the soul. The soul apparently remembered other things, too. Each warrior was dressed in ancient, remembered armor. Each warrior carried remembered weapons that could inflict well-remembered death. But the undead needed no weapons. They could kill from fear alone, or by the touch of their grave, cold hands.
How can we fight these things?
Tanis thought wildly. He who had never felt such fear in the face of flesh and blood enemies, panic engulfed him, and he considered yelling for the others to turn and run for it. Angrily, the half-elf forced himself to calm down, to get a grip on reality. Reality! He almost laughed at the irony. Running was useless. They would get lost, separated. They had to stay and deal with this. Somehow. He began to walk toward the ghostly warriors. The dead said nothing, made no threatening moves. They simply stood, blocking the path. It was impossible to count them, since some glimmered into being, while others faded, only to return when their comrades dimmed. Not that it makes any difference, Tanis admitted to himself, feeling sweat chill his body. One of these undead warriors could kill all of us simply by lifting its hand. As the half-elf drew nearer to the warriors, he saw a gleam of light, Raistlin's staff. The mage, leaning on his staff, stood in front of the huddle of companions. Tanis came to stand beside him. The pale crystal light reflected on the mage's face, making it seem nearly as ghostly as the faces of the dead before him.
"Welcome to Darkened Wood, Tanis," the mage said.
"Raistlin," Tanis choked. He had to try more than once to get his dry throat to form a sound.
"What are these?" "Spectral minions,"
the mage whispered, without taking his eyes from them.
"We are fortunate."
"Fortunate?" Tanis repeated incredulously. "Why?"
"These are the spirits of men who gave their pledge to perform some task. They failed in that pledge, and it is their doom to keep performing the same task over and over until they win their release and find true rest in death."
"How in the name of the abyss does that make us fortunate?" Tanis whispered harshly, releasing his fear and anger. "Perhaps they pledged to rid the forest of all who entered."
"That is possible."
Raistlin flickered a glance at the half-elf.
"Though I do not think it likely. We will find out."
Before Tanis could react, the mage stepped away from the group and faced the specters.
"Raist," Caramon said in a strangled voice, starting to shove forward.
"Keep him back, Tanis,"
Raistlin commanded harshly.
"Our lives depend on this."
Gripping the warrior's arm, Tanis asked Raistlin, "What are you going to do?"
"I am going to cast a spell that will enable us to communicate with them. I will perceive their thoughts. They will speak through me."
The mage threw his head back. His hood slipping off, he stretched out his arms and began to speak.
"Ast bilak, Pabilakar, Sutangus Moipar,"
he murmured, then repeated that phrase three times. As Raistlin spoke, the crowd of warriors parted, and a figure more awesome and terrifying than the rest appeared. The specter was taller than the rest, and wore a shimmering crown. His pallid armor was richly decorated with dark jewels. His face showed the most terrible grief and anguish. He advanced upon Raistlin. Caramon choked and averted his eyes. Tanis dared not speak or cry out, fearful of disturbing the mage and breaking the spell. The spectre raised a fleshless hand, reached out slowly to touch the young mage. Tanis trembled. The spectre's touch meant certain death, but Raistlin, entranced, did not move. Tanis wondered if he even saw the chill hand coming toward his heart. Then Raistlin spoke.
"You who have been long dead, use my living voice to tell us of your bitter sorrow. Then give us leave to pass through this forest, for our purpose is not evil, as you will see if you read our hearts."
The spectre's hand halted abruptly. The pale eyes searched Raistlin's face, then, shimmering in the darkness, the spectre bowed before the mage. Tanis sucked in his breath. He had sensed Raistlin's power, but this... Raistlin returned the bow, then moved to stand beside the spectre. His face was nearly as pale as that of the ghostly figure next to him, the living dead and the dead living, Tanis thought, shuddering. When Raistlin spoke, his voice was no longer the wheezing whispering of the fragile mage. It was deep and dark and commanding and rang through the forest. It was cold and hollow and might have come from below the ground.
"Who are you who trespass in Darkened Wood?"
Tanis tried to answer, but his throat had dried up completely. Caramon, next to him, couldn't even lift his head. Then Tanis felt movement at his side, the Kender. Cursing himself, he reached out to grab for Tasselhoff, but it was too late. The small figure, topknot dancing, ran out into the light of Raistlin's staff and stood before the spectre. Tasselhoff bowed respectfully.
"I am Tasselhoff Burfoot," he said. "My friends,"
he waved his small hand at the group,
"call me Tass." "Who are you?"
"It matters little,"
the sepulchral voice intoned. "Know only that we are warriors from a time long forgotten."
"Is it true that you broke a pledge and that's how you come to be here?"
Tass asked with interest.
"It is. We pledged to guard this land. Then came the smoldering mountain from the heavens. The land was ripped apart. Evil things crept out from the bowels of the earth, and we dropped our swords and fled in terror until bitter death overtook us. We have been called to fulfill our oath, as evil once more stalks the land. And here will we remain until evil is driven back and balance is restored again."
Suddenly, Raistlin gave a shriek and flung back his head, his eyes rolling upward until the watching companions could see only the whites. His voice became a thousand voices crying out at once. This startled even the Kender, who stepped back a pace and looked around uneasily for Tanis. The spectre raised his hand in a commanding gesture, and the tumult ceased as though swallowed by the darkness.
"My men demand to know the reason you enter Darken Wood. If it is for evil, you will find that you have brought evil upon yourselves, for you will not live to see the moons rise."
"No, not evil, certainly not,"
Tasselhoff said hurriedly.
"It's kind of a long story, you see, but we're obviously not going anywhere in a big hurry, and you're obviously not either, so I'll tell it to you. To begin with, we were in the Inn of the Last Home in Solace. You probably don't know it. I'm not sure how long it's been there, but it wasn't around during the Cataclysm, and it sounds like you were. Well, there we were, listening to the old man talking of Huma, and the old man, not Huma, told Gold Moon to sing her song, and she said what song, and then she sang, and a Seeker decided to be a music critic, and Riverwind, that's the tall man over there, shoved the Seeker into the fire. It was an accident, he didn't mean to. But the Seeker went up like a torch. You should have seen it. Anyway, the old man handed me the staff and said, 'Hit him,' and I did, and the staff turned to blue crystal, and the flames died, and—"
"Blue crystal,"
the spectre's voice echoed hollowly from Raistlin's throat as he began to walk toward them. Tanis and Sturm both jumped forward, grabbing Tass and dragging him out of the way, but the spectre seemed intent only on examining the group. His flickering eyes focused on Gold Moon. Raising a pale hand, he motioned her forward.
"No."
Riverwind tried to prevent her from leaving his side, but she pushed away gently and walked over to stand before the spectre, the staff in her hand. The ghostly army encircled them. Suddenly the spectre drew his sword from its pallid sheath. He held it high overhead, and white light, tinged with blue flame, flickered from the blade.
"Look at the staff,"
Gold Moon gasped. The staff glowed pale blue, as if answering the sword. The ghostly king turned to Raistlin and reached his pale hand toward the entranced mage. Caramon gave a hoarse bellow and broke free of Tanis's grip. Drawing his sword, he lunged at the undead warrior. The blade pierced the flickering body, but it was Caramon who screamed in pain and dropped, writhing, to the ground. Tanis and Sturm knelt beside him. Raistlin stared ahead, his expression unchanged, unmoving.
"Caramon, where?"
Tanis held him, trying frantically to see where the big man was injured.
"My hand,"
Caramon rocked back and forth, sobbing. His left hand, his sword hand, thrust tightly under his right arm.
"What's the matter?"
Tanis asked. Then, seeing the warrior's sword on the ground, he knew. Caramon's sword was rimmed with frost. Tanis looked up in horror and saw the specter's hand close tightly around Raistlin's wrist. A shudder racked the mage's frail body, his face twisted in pain, but he did not fall. The mage's eyes closed. The lines of cynicism and bitterness smoothed away, and the peace of death descended on him. Tanis watched in awe, only partially aware of Caramon's hoarse cries. He saw Raistlin's face transform again, this time imbued with ecstasy. The mage's aura of power intensified until it glowed around him with an almost palpable brilliance.
"We are summoned,"
Raistlin said. The voice was his own, and yet like none Tanis had ever heard him use.
"We must go."
The mage turned his back on them and walked into the woods, the ghostly king's fleshless hand still grasping his wrist. The circle of undead parted to let him pass.
"Stop them,"
Caramon moaned. He staggered to his feet. "We can't." Tanis fought to restrain him, and finally the big man collapsed in the half-elf's arms, weeping like a child.
"We'll follow him. He'll be all right. He's Magi, Cameron. We can't understand. We'll follow."
The eyes of the undead flickered with an unholy light as they watched the companions pass them and enter the forest, the spectral army closed ranks behind them. The companions stepped into a raging battle. Steel rang, wounded men shrieked for help. So real was the clash of armies in the darkness that Sturm drew his sword reflexively. The tumult deafened him. He ducked and dodged unseen blows that he knew were aimed at him. He swung his sword in desperation, at black air, knowing that he was doomed and there was no escape. He began to run, and he suddenly stumbled out of the forest into a barren, wasted glade. Raistlin stood before him, alone. The mage's eyes were closed. He sighed gently, then collapsed to the ground. Sturm ran to him. Then Caramon appeared, nearly knocking Sturm over to reach his brother and gather him tenderly in his arms. One by one the others ran, as if driven into the glade. Raistlin was still murmuring strange, unfamiliar words. The specters vanished.
"Raist!"
Caramon sobbed brokenly. The mage's eyes flickered and opened.
"The spell drained me,"
he whispered.
"I must rest."
"And rest ye shall,"
boomed a voice, a living voice. Tanis breathed a sigh of relief. Even as he put his hand on his sword, quickly he and the others jumped protectively in front of Raistlin, turning to face outward, staring into the darkness. Then the silver moon appeared, suddenly, as if a hand had produced it from beneath a black silk scarf. Now they could see the head and shoulders of a man standing amid the trees. His bare shoulders were as large and heavy as Caramon's. A mane of long hair curled around his neck. His eyes were bright and glittered coldly. The companions heard a rustling in the brush and saw the flash of a spear tip being raised, pointing at Tanis.
"Put thy puny weapons down,"
the man warned.
"Ye be surrounded and have not a chance."
"A trick,"
Sturm growled, but even as he spoke there was a tremendous crashing and cracking of tree limbs. More men appeared, surrounding them, all armed with spears that glinted in the moonlight. The first man strode toward them, and the companions stared in amazement, their hands on their weapons, going slack. The man wasn't a man at all, but a centaur. Human from the waist up, he had the body of a horse from the waist down. He cantered forward with easy grace, powerful muscles rippling across his barrel chest. Other centaurs moved into the path at his commanding gesture. Tanis sheathed his sword. Flint sneezed.
"Thee must come with us," the centaur ordered. "My brother is ill," Caramon growled. "He can't go anywhere." "Place him upon my back,"
the centaur said coolly.
"In fact, if any of you be tired, thee may ride to where we go."
"Where are you taking us?" Tanis asked.
"Thee is in no position to ask questions."
The centaur reached out and prodded Caramon's back with his spear.
"We travel far and fast. I suggest thee ride, but fear not."
He bowed before Gold Moon, extending his foreleg and touching his hand to his shaggy hair.
"Harm will not come to thee this night."
"Can I ride, Tanis, please?" begged Tasselhoff.
"Don't trust them,"
Flint sneezed violently. "I don't trust them," Tanis muttered. "But we don't seem to have a whole lot of choice in the matter. Raceland can't walk." "Go on, Tass. The rest of you, too." Caramon, scowling at the centaurs suspiciously, lifted his brother in his arms and set him upon the back of one of the half-men, half-animals. Raceland slumped forward weakly.
"Climb up," the centaur said to Caramon. "I can bear the weight of thee both. Thy brother will need thy support, for we ride swiftly tonight."
Flushing with embarrassment, the big warrior clambered onto the centaur's broad back, his huge legs dangling almost to the ground. He put an arm around Raceland as the centaur galloped down the path. Tasselhoff, giggling with excitement, jumped onto a centaur and promptly slid off the other side into the mud. Sturm, sighing, picked up the kender and set him on the centaur's back. Then, before Flint could protest, the knight lifted the dwarf up behind Tass. Flint tried to speak but could only sneeze as the centaur moved away. Tanis rode with the first centaur, who seemed to be the leader. "Where are you taking us?" Tanis asked again.
"To the forest master,"
the centaur answered. "The forest master?" Tanis repeated. "Who is he? One like yourselves?"
"She is the forest master,"
the centaur replied, and began to canter down the trail. Tanis started to ask another question, but the centaur's quickened pace jolted him, and he nearly bit through his tongue as he came down hard on the centaur's back. Feeling himself start to slide backward as the centaur trotted faster and faster, Tanis threw his arms around the centaur's broad torso.
"Nay, thee doesn't need to squeeze me in two."
The centaur glanced back, his eyes glittering in the moonlight.
"It be my job to see thee stays on. Relax. Put thy hands on me, rump, to balance thyself. There now, grip with thy legs."
The centaurs left the trail and plunged into the forest. The moonlight was immediately swallowed up by the dense trees. Tanis felt branches whip past, swiping at his clothing. The centaur never swerved or slowed in his gallop, however, and Tanis could only assume he knew the trail well, a trail the half-elf couldn't see. Soon the pace began to slacken, and the centaur finally came to a stop. Tanis could see nothing in the smothering darkness. He knew his companions were near only because he could hear Raceland's shallow breathing, Caramon's jingling armor, and Flint's unabated sneezing. Even the light from Raceland's staff had died.
"A powerful magic is laid on this forest,"
the mage whispered weakly when Tanis asked him about it.
"This magic dispels all others."
Tanis's uneasiness grew. "Why are we stopping?"
"Because thee art here,"
Dismount!
The centaur ordered gruffly. Where is here? Tanis slid off the centaur's broad back onto the ground. He stared around him but could see nothing. Apparently the trees kept even the smallest glimmer of moonlight or starlight from penetrating through to the trail.
"He stands in the center of Darken Wood,"
the centaur replied.
"And now I bid thee farewell, or fare evil, depending on how the forest master judges thee."
"Wait a minute,"
Caramon called out angrily.
"You can't leave us here in the middle of this forest, blind as newborn kittens. Stop them,"
Tanis ordered, reaching for his sword. But his weapon was gone. An explosive oath from Sturm indicated the knight had discovered the same thing. The centaur chuckled. Tanis heard hooves beat into soft earth and tree branches rustled. The centaurs were gone.
"Good riddance,"
Flint sneezed. "Are we all here?" Tanis asked, reaching out his hand and feeling Sturm's strong, reassuring grip.
"I'm here," piped Tasselhoff. "Oh, Tanis, wasn't it wonderful? I—"
"Hush, Tass,"
Tanis snapped. "The plainsman?" "We're here," said Riverwind grimly, weaponless.
"No one has a weapon?" Tanis asked.
"Not that it would do us much good in this cursed blackness." He amended bitterly. "I have my staff." Goldmoon's low voice said softly. "And a formidable weapon that is, daughter of Kuei Shu," came a deep voice. "A weapon for good, intended to combat illness and injury and disease." The unseen voice grew sad. "In these times it will also be used as a weapon against the evil creatures who seek to find and banish it from the world."
Chapter 11. The Forest Master. A Peaceful Interlude.
"Who are you?" Tanis called.
"Show yourself."
"We will not harm you,"
bluffed Caramon. "Of course you won't." Now the deep voice was amused. "You have no weapons." "I will return them when the time is propitious."
"No one brings weapons into Darken Wood. Not even a knight of Solamnia."
"Do not fear, noble knight. I recognize your blade as ancient and most valuable. I will keep it safe. Forgive this apparent lack of trust. But even the great Huma laid the dragon lance at my feet."
"Huma!"
Sturm gasped. "Who are you?"
"I am the Forest Master." Even as the deep voice spoke, the darkness parted. A gasp of awe, gentle as a spring wind, swept the company as they stared before them. Silver moonlight shone brightly on a high rock ledge. Standing on the ledge was a unicorn. She regarded them coolly, her intelligent eyes gleaming with infinite wisdom. The unicorn's beauty pierced the heart. Goldmoon felt swift tears spring to her eyes, and she was forced to close them against the animal's magnificent radiance. Her fur was the silver of moonlight, her horn was shining pearl, her mane like sea foam. The head might have been sculpted from glistening marble, but no human or even dwarven hand could capture the elegance and grace that lived in the fine lines of the powerful neck and muscular chest. The legs were strong but delicate, the hooves small and cloven like those of a goat. In later days, when Goldmoon walked dark paths and her heart was bleak with despair and hopelessness, she had only to shut her eyes and remember the unicorn to find comfort. The unicorn tossed her head and then lowered it in grave welcome, the companions, feeling awkward and clumsy and confused, bowed in return. The unicorn suddenly whirled and left the rock ledge, cantering down the rocks toward them. Tanis, feeling a spell lifted from him, looked around. The bright silver moonlight lit a sylvan glade. Tall trees surrounded them like giant, beneficent guardians. The half-elf was aware of a deep, abiding sense of peace here, but there was also a waiting sadness. "Rest yourselves," the forest master said as she came among them. "You are tired and hungry. Food will be brought and fresh water for cleansing. You may put aside your watchfulness and fears for this evening. Safety exists here, if it exists anywhere in this land tonight." Caramon, his eyes lighting up at the mention of food, eased his brother to the ground. Raceland sank into the grass against the trunk of a tree. His face was deathly pale in the silver moonlight, but his breathing was easy. He did not seem ill, so much as just terribly exhausted. Caramon sat next to him, looking around for food. Then he heaved a sigh. "Probably more berries, anyway," the warrior said, unhappily to Tanis. "I crave meat. Roasted deer haunch, a nice sizzling bit of rabbit." "Hush," Sturm remonstrated softly, glancing at the forest master. "She'd probably consider roasting you first." Centaurs came out of the forest bearing a clean white cloth, which they spread on the grass. Others placed clear crystal globe lights on the cloth, illuminating the forest. Tasselhoff glared at the lights curiously.
"They're bug lights."
The crystal globes held thousands of tiny bugs, each one having two brightly glowing spots on its back. They crawled around inside the globes, apparently content to explore their surroundings. Next, the centaurs brought bowls of cool water and clean white cloths to bathe their faces and hands. The water refreshed their bodies and minds as it washed away the stains of battle. Other centaurs placed chairs, which Caramon stared at dubiously. They were crafted of one piece of wood that curved around the body. They appeared comfortable, except that each chair had only one leg. "Please, be seated," said the forest master graciously.
"I can't sit in that," the warrior protested. "I'll tip over."
He stood at the edge of the tablecloth.
"Besides, the tablecloth is spread on the grass. I'll sit on the grass with it." "Close to the food," muttered Flint into his beard.
The others glanced uneasily at the chairs, the strange crystal bug lamps, and the centaurs. The chieftain's daughter, however, knew what was expected of guests. Although the outside world might have considered her people barbarians, Gold Moon's tribe had strict rules of politeness that must be religiously observed. Gold Moon knew that to keep your host waiting was an insult to both the host and his bounty. She sat down with regal grace. The one-legged chair rocked slightly, adjusting to her height, crafting itself to her alone.
"Sit at my right hand, warrior," she said formally, conscious of the many eyes upon them.
Riverwind's face showed no emotion, though he was a ludicrous sight trying to bend his tall body to sit in the seemingly fragile chair. But once seated, he leaned back comfortably, almost smiling in disbelieving approval.
"Thank you all for waiting until I was seated," Gold Moon said hastily, to cover the others' hesitation. "You may all sit now."
"Oh, that's all right," began Caramon, folding his arms across his chest. "I wasn't waiting. I'm not going to sit in these weird chip—"
Sturm's elbow dug sharply into the warrior's ribs.
"Gracious lady," Sturm bowed and sat down with knightly dignity.
"Well, if he can do it, so can I,"
muttered Caramon, his decision hastened by the fact that the centaurs were bringing in food. He helped his brother to a seat and then sat down gingerly, making certain the chair bore his weight. Four centaurs positioned themselves at each of the four corners of the huge white cloth spread out upon the ground. They lifted the cloth to the height of a table, then released it. The cloth remained floating in place, its delicately embroidered surface as hard and sturdy as one of the solid tables in the inn of the last home.
"How splendid! How did they do that?"
Tasselhoff cried, peering underneath the cloth.
"There's nothing under there,"
he reported, his eyes wide. The centaurs laughed uproariously, and even the forest master smiled. Next, the centaurs laid down plates made of beautifully cut and polished wood. Each guest was given a knife and fork fashioned from the horns of a deer. Platters of hot roasted meat filled the air with a tantalizing, smoky aroma. Fragrant loaves of bread and huge wooden bowls of fruit glistened in the soft lamplight. Caraman, feeling secure in his chair, rubbed his hands together. Then he grinned broadly and picked up his fork.
"Ah!"
He sighed in appreciation as one of the centaurs set before him a platter of roasted deer meat. Caraman plunged his fork in, sniffing in rapture at the steam and juice that gushed forth from the meat. Suddenly, he realized everyone was staring at him. He stopped and looked around.
"What?"
he asked, blinking. Then his eyes rested on the forest master, and he flushed and hurriedly removed his fork.
I beg your pardon. The deer must have been someone you knew. I mean, one of your subjects."
The forest master smiled gently. "Be at ease, warrior," she said. "The deer fulfills his purpose in life by providing sustenance for the hunter, be it wolf or man. We do not mourn the loss of those who die fulfilling their destinies." It seemed to Tanis that the forest master's dark eyes went to Sturm as she spoke, and there was a deep sadness in them that filled the half-elf's heart with cold fear. But when he turned back to the forest master, he saw the magnificent animal smiling once more. "My imagination," he thought.
"How do we know, master," Tanis asked hesitantly, "whether the life of any creature has fulfilled its destiny? I have known the very old to die in bitterness and despair. I have seen young children die before their time, but I leave behind such a legacy of love and joy that grief for their passing was tempered by the knowledge that their brief lives had given much to others." "You have answered your own question, Tanis, half-elven, far better than I could," the forest master said gravely. "Say that our lives are measured not by gain, but by giving."
The half-elf started to reply, but the forest master interrupted. "Put your cares aside for now. Enjoy the peace of my forest while you may. Its time is passing." Tanis glanced sharply at the forest master, but the great animal had turned her attention away from him and was staring far off into the woods, her eyes clouded with sorrow. The half-elf wondered what she meant, and he sat, lost in dark thoughts, until he felt a gentle hand touch his.
"You should eat," Gold Moon said. "Your cares won't vanish with the meal, and if they do, so much the better."
Tanis smiled at her and began to eat with a sharp appetite. He took the forest master's advice and relegated his worries to the back of his mind for a while. Gold Moon was right. They weren't likely to go away. The rest of the companions did the same, accepting the strangeness of their surroundings with the aplomb of seasoned travelers, though there was nothing to drink but water, much to Flint's disappointment. The cool, clear liquid washed the terrors and doubts from their hearts, as it had cleansed the blood and dirt from their hands. They laughed, talked, and ate, enjoying each other's companionship. The forest master spoke to them no more,
but watched each in turn. Sturm's pale face had regained some color. He ate with grace and dignity. Sitting next to Tasselhoff, he answered the Kender's inexhaustible store of questions about his homeland. He also, without calling undue attention to the fact, removed from Tasselhoff's pouch a knife and fork that had unaccountably made their way there. The knight sat as far from Karaman as possible and did his best to ignore him. The big warrior was obviously enjoying his meal. He ate three times more than anyone else, three times as fast and three times as loudly. When not eating, he described to Flint a fight with a troll, using the bone he was chewing on as a sword to illustrate his thrusts and parries. Flint ate, heartily, and told Karaman he was the biggest liar in Kryn. Raistlin, sitting beside his brother, ate very little, taking nibbles of only the tenderest meat, a few grapes, and a bit of bread he soaked in water first. He said nothing but listened intently to everyone, absorbing all that was said into his soul, storing it for future reference and use. Gold Moon ate her meal delicately, with practiced ease. The Kuei-shu princess was accustomed to eating in public view and could make conversation easily. She chatted with Tanis, encouraging him to describe the elven lands and other places he had visited. Riverwind, next to her, was acutely uncomfortable and self-conscious. Although not a boisterous eater like Karaman, the plainsman was obviously more accustomed to eating at the campfires of his fellow tribesmen than in royal halls. He handled cutlery with awkward clumsiness, and he knew that he appeared crude beside Gold Moon. He said nothing, seeming willing to fade into the background. Finally, everyone began shoving plates away and settling back in the strange wooden chairs, ending their dinner with pieces of sweet shortcake. Tass began to sing his Kender trail song to the delight of the centaurs. Then suddenly, Raistlin spoke. His soft, whispering voice slithered through the laughter and loud talk.
Forest Master.
The mage hissed the name.
Today we fought loathsome creatures that we have never seen before on Kryn. Can you tell us of these?
The relaxed and festive mood was smothered as effectively as if covered by a shroud. Everyone exchanged grim looks.
These creatures walk like men, Karaman added, but look like reptiles. They have clawed hands and feet and wings and...
His voice dropped.
They turn to stone when they die.
The forest master regarded them with sadness as she rose to her feet. She seemed to expect the question.
I know of these creatures, she answered. Some of them entered the darkened wood with a party of goblins from Haven a week ago. They wore hoods and cloaks, no doubt to disguise their horrible appearance. The centaurs followed them in secret, to make certain they harmed no one before the spectral minions dealt with them. The centaurs reported that the creatures call themselves Draconians, and speak of belonging to the Order of Draco. Raistlin's brow furrowed.
Draco,
he whispered, puzzled.
But who are they? What race or species?
I do not know. I can tell you only this. They are not of the animal world, and they belong to none of the races of Kryn.
This took a moment for everyone to assimilate. Karaman blinked.
I don't, he began.
She means, my brother, that they are not of this world,
Raistlin explained impatiently.
And where'd they come from?
Karaman asked, startled.
That's the question, isn't it?
Raistlin said coldly.
Where did they come from? And why?
I cannot answer that. The Forest Master shook her head, but I can tell you that before the spectral minions put an end to these Draconians, they spoke of armies to the north.
I saw them. Tanis rose to his feet. Campfires. His voice caught in his throat as he realized what the Forest Master had been about to say.
Armies? Of these Draconians? There must be thousands.
Now everyone was standing and talking at once.
Impossible, the knight said, scowling. Who's behind this? The Seekers? By the gods!
Caramon bellowed. I've got a notion to go to Haven and bash.
Go to Salamnia, not Haven, Sturm advised loudly.
We should travel to Qualinost, Tanis argued.
The elves.
The elves have their own problems.
The Forest Master interrupted, her cool voice a calming influence.
As do the High Seekers of Haven. No place is safe. But I will tell you where you must go to find answers to your questions.
What do you mean you will tell us where to go?
Raistlin stepped forward slowly, his red robes rippling around him as he walked.
What do you know of us?
The mage paused, his eyes narrowing with a sudden thought.
Yes, I was expecting you.
The Forest Master replied in answer to Raistlin's thought.
A great and shining being appeared to me in the wilderness this day. He told me that the one bearing the blue crystal staff would come this night to Darken Wood. The spectral minions would let the staff-bearer and her companions pass, though they have allowed no human or elf or dwarf or kender to enter Darken Wood since the cataclysm. I was to give the bearer of the staff this message. You must fly straight away across the East Wall Mountains. In 2 days the staff-bearer must be within Zakht-Saroth. There, if you prove worthy, you shall receive the greatest gift given to the world.
East Wall Mountains!
The dwarf's mouth dropped open.
We'll need to fly all right to reach Zakht-Saroth in 2 days' time, shining being! Ha!
He snapped his fingers. The rest glanced uneasily at each other. Finally, Tanis said hesitantly,
I'm afraid the dwarf is right, Forest Master. The journey to Zakht-Saroth would be long and perilous. We would have to go back through lands we know are inhabited by goblins and these Draconians.
And then we would have to pass through the plains.
Riverwind spoke for the first time since meeting the Forest Master.
Our lives are forfeit.
He gestured toward Gold Moon.
The Kweshu are fierce fighters, and they know the land. They are waiting. We would never get through safely.
He looked at Tanis, and my people have no love for elves.
And why go to Zakht-Saroth anyway?
Caramon rumbled. Greatest gift. What could that be? A powerful sword? A chest of steel coins?
That would come in handy, but there's a battle brewing up north, apparently. I'd hate to miss it.
The Forest Master nodded gravely. I understand your dilemma, she said. I offer what help is in my power. I will see to it that you reach Zakht-Saroth in 2 days. The question is, will you go?
Tanis turned to the others. Sturm's face was drawn. He met Tanis's look and sighed.
The stag led us here, he said slowly. Perhaps to receive this advice. But my heart lies north, in my homeland. If armies of these Draconians are preparing to attack, my place is with those knights, who will surely band together to fight this evil. Still, I do not want to desert you, Tanis. Or you, lady.
He nodded to Gold Moon, then slumped down, his aching head in his hands.
Caramon shrugged. I'll go anywhere, fight anything, Tanis. You know that. What say you, brother?
But Raistlin, staring into the darkness, did not answer. Gold Moon and River Wind were speaking together in low voices. They nodded to each other. Then Gold Moon said to Tanis,
"We will go to Zaktzaroth. We appreciate everything you've done for us.
But we ask for no man's help any longer," Riverwind stated proudly. "This is the completion of our quest. As we began alone, so we will finish it alone."
"And you will die alone,"
Raistlin said softly. Tanis shivered. "Raistlin," he said, "a word with you?" The mage turned obediently and walked with the half-elf into a small thicket of gnarled and stunted trees. Darkness closed around them.
"Just like the old days," Caramon said, his eyes following his brother uneasily. "And look at all the trouble we got into then,"
Flint reminded him, plopping down onto the grass.
"I wonder what they talk about," Tasselhoff said.
Long ago, the Kender had tried to eavesdrop on these private conversations between the mage and the half-elf, but Tanis had always caught him and shooed him away.
"And why can't they discuss it with us?"
"Because we'd probably rip Raistlin's heart out,"
Sturm answered in a low, pain-filled voice.
"I don't care what you say, Caramon. There's a dark side to your brother, and Tanis has seen it, for which I'm grateful. He can deal with it. I couldn't."
Uncharacteristically, Caramon said nothing. Sturm stared at the warrior, startled. In the old days, the fighter would have leaped to his brother's defense. Now he sat silent, preoccupied, his face troubled. "So there is a dark side to Raistlin, and now Caramon too knows what it is." Sturm shuddered, wondering what had happened in these past 5 years that cast such a dark shadow across the cheerful warrior. Raistlin walked close to Tanis. The mage's arms were crossed in the sleeves of his robes, his head bowed in thought. Tanis could feel the heat of Raistlin's body radiate through the red robes, as though he were being consumed by an inner fire. As usual, Tanis felt uncomfortable in the young mage's presence. Yet right now, he knew of no one else he could turn to for advice.
"What do you know of Zaktzaroth?"
Tanis asked.
"There was a temple there. A temple to the ancient gods,"
Raistlin whispered. His eyes glittered in the eerie light of the red moon.
"It was destroyed in the cataclysm, and its people fled, certain that the gods had abandoned them. It passed from memory. I did not know it still existed."
"What did you see, Raistlin?" Tanis asked softly, after a long pause. "You looked far away. What did you see?"
"I am Magi, Tanis. Not a seer."
"Don't give me that,"
Tanis snapped. "It's been a long time, but not that long. I know you don't have the gift of foresight. You were thinking, not scrying. And you came up with answers. I want those answers. You've got more brains than all of us put together, even if—" He stopped.
"Even if I am twisted and warped."
Raistlin's voice rose with harsh arrogance.
"Yes, I am smarter than you, all of you. And someday I will prove it. Someday you, with all your strength and charm and good looks, you, all of you, will call me master."
His hands clenched to fists inside his robes. His eyes flared red in the crimson moonlight. Tanis, who was accustomed to this tirade, waited patiently. The mage relaxed, his hands unclenched.
"But for now, I give you my advice. What did I see? These armies, Tanis, armies of Draconians, will overrun Solace and Haven and all the lands of your fathers. That is the reason we must reach Zaktzaroth. What we find there will prove this army's undoing."
"But why are there armies?" Tanis asked. "What would anyone want with control of Solace and Haven and the plains to the east? Is it the Seekers?"
Seekers. Ha!
Raceland snorted.
Open your eyes, half-elf. Someone or something powerful created these creatures, these Draconians, not the idiot Seekers. And no one goes to all that trouble to take over 2 farm cities, or even to look for a blue crystal staff. This is a war of conquest, Tanis. Someone seeks to conquer Ancelin. Within 2 days' time, life on Kryn as we have known it will come to an end. This is the portent of the fallen stars. The Queen of Darkness has returned. We face a foe who seeks, at the very least, to enslave us, or perhaps destroy us completely.
Your advice? Tanis asked reluctantly. He felt change coming, and, like all elves, he feared and detested change. Raistlin smiled his crooked, bitter smile, reveling in his moment of superiority.
That we go to Zaktzaroth immediately. That we leave tonight, if possible, by whatever means this forest master has planned. If we do not acquire this gift within 2 days, the armies of Draconians will.
What do you think this gift might be? Tanis wondered aloud. A sword? Or coins, like Karaman said?
My brother's a fool.
Raceland stated coldly.
You don't believe that. And neither do I.
Then what? Tanis pursued. Raceland's eyes narrowed.
I have given you my advice. Act upon it as you will. I have my own reasons for going. Let us leave it at that, half-elf. But it will be dangerous. Zaktzaroth was abandoned 300 years ago. I do not think it will have remained abandoned long.
That is true, Tanis mused. He stood silently for long moments. The mage coughed once, softly. Do you believe we were chosen, Raistlin? Tanis asked. The mage did not hesitate.
Yes. So I was given to know in the Towers of Sorcery. So Parsalian told me.
But why? Tanis questioned impatiently. We are not the stuff of heroes. Well, maybe Sturm.
Ah, said Raistlin. But who chose us? And for what purpose? Consider that, Tanis, half-elven.
The mage bowed to Tanis mockingly and turned to walk back through the brush to the rest of the group.
Chapter 12. Winged Sleep, Smoke in the East, Dark Memories.
Zaktzaroth, Tanis said. That is my decision. Is that what the mage advises? Sturm asked sullenly.
It is,
Tanis answered.
And I believe his advice is sound. If we do not reach Zaktzaroth within 2 days, others will, and this greatest gift may be lost forever.
The greatest gift?
Tasselhoff said, his eyes shining. Just think, Flint, jewels beyond price, or maybe...
A keg of ale and Otix fried potatoes, the dwarf muttered. And a nice warm fire. But no, Zaktzaroth.
I guess we're all in agreement then, Tanis said. If you feel you are needed in the north, Sturm. Of course you...
I will go with you to Zaktzaroth, Sturm sighed. There is nothing in the north for me. I have been deluding myself. The knights of my order are scattered, holed up in crumbling fortresses, fighting off the debt collectors.
The knight's face twisted in agony, and he lowered his head. Tanis suddenly felt tired, his neck hurt, his shoulders and back ached. His leg muscles twitched. He started to say something more, then felt a gentle hand touch his shoulder.
He looked up to see Gold Moon's face, cool and calm in the moonlight.
"You are weary, my friend," she said. "We all are. But we are glad you are coming, Riverwind and I." Her hand was strong. She looked up, her clear gaze encompassing the entire group. "We are glad all of you are coming with us."
Tanis, glancing at Riverwind, wasn't certain the tall plainsman agreed with her.
"Just another adventure,"
Caraman said, flushing with embarrassment.
"Hey, Raist."
He nudged his brother. Raistlin, ignoring his twin, looked at the forest master.
"We must leave immediately,"
the mage said coldly.
"You mentioned something about helping us cross the mountains."
"Indeed," the forest master replied, nodding gravely. "I too am glad you have made this decision. I hope you find my aid welcome." The forest master raised her head, looking up into the sky. The companions followed her gaze. The night sky, seen through the canopy of tall trees, glittered brilliantly with stars. Soon, the companions became aware of something flying up there, winking out the stars in passing.
"I'll be a gully dwarf,"
Flint said solemnly.
"Flying horses. What next?"
"Ooh!"
Tasselhoff drew in a deep breath. The Kender was transfixed with wonder as he watched the beautiful animals